Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Women who had to travel to the UK to terminate pregnancies due to medical reasons have appealed for more support and changes to the Irish law. And in a new book that was created with support from the LMC Bereavement Support Charity, it really shares some of these women's experiences and stories. And two of the women who feature in the book are with me here on the programme today. And Alison and Monica, you're both very welcome and thanks for joining us in the show. Alison, you might just explain, first of all, where the idea for the book came from.
Well, the idea for the book actually came from Monica, so you might want to direct that question at Monica. So, and she'll explain that one to you.
What inspired the book, Monica, then?
Hi, Andrea. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So, to give you some context, I had my baby girl, Maeve, in Liverpool last year in April. I was 32 weeks pregnant. And she was diagnosed with hydranencephaly, which is a very rare brain condition. So basically, we found out at week 20 that the brain ventricles were slightly enlarged, and then it kept getting worse and worse. And we were obviously doing MRIs, all the scans, everything. And then in week 30, we had a scan, and our consultant said, listen, it's really bad. And then she said, go into Liverpool. Should be something you should consider. I was absolutely shocked because I had no idea. I thought, okay, things are really bad. We're likely going to lose her. But I was not expecting to hear that I would have to consider traveling anywhere.
Leaving Ireland, because I take it you were being told that with the condition, Monica, that your baby was diagnosed with, that the pregnancy, was it going to be viable at all beyond that point, or?
No, so that is the whole problem with the current legislation and the 28-day rule. So with hydranencephaly, the consultant said it's unlikely that she would survive the birth, but she couldn't discard that possibility, okay. So she could survive the birth, and then they would have to intervene and keep her on life support, pretty much. And with this condition, infants can make it up to 1 year in some success stories, for lack of a better word. But it's surviving. You know, she wouldn't have any quality of life at all. And so, yeah, we had another scan on the same day. The consultant confirmed the diagnosis as well. And then I was given details of LMC. And I was sent all of my files. You have to self-refer. That's another quite a cruel thing to do to a woman. You have to self-refer, send all the details to Liverpool. And I sent them on the Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the following day, they go back to me after having reviewed my file, and they said, come in to us next Tuesday. So my consultant, you know, I can't fault, they did everything they could, but she said, well, even if I bring it to the board of directors at the hospital, it's still not guaranteed. So you might have to face a legal battle, because they couldn't sign a paper saying, yes, the baby will die within 28 days. You know, it could be months, it could be weeks, we don't know. So,
and for any parent, Monica, it's such devastating news for you, and any, I'm sure, many others listening to us today, that, you know, at some point maybe have had to hear those words as well.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, for anyone who's been pregnant, you're lying down, listening to, seeing the baby on the ultrasound machine, and then you feel them kicking in your belly, and you know, you want to bring them home and see them smile and walk and have the life that you prayed for them. You know, it's your world is shattered, and then you hear the consultant say, yeah, you should consider Liverpool, Amsterdam or London. You know, those were our options. And of course, I didn't just say yes. I thought there must be something that we can do. And then she repeatedly said, no, it's really bad. But I can't help you here, even though I would love to. So, yeah, that's another part of it. Doctors have to ship their patients away.
And for you, Monica, in being told that, because obviously the Irish law allows for abortion during the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, and I know there is some kind of exceptional circumstances permitted, but you know, for you then having to go and travel and to make that journey, can you maybe just tell us a little bit about how difficult that was for you at that time?
about the journey, yeah. And then I'll go back to the book, because the book was actually inspired by a book that I'd got in Liverpool. But yeah, the journey, it was, yeah, I say in the book, it was the least wanted trip we had to plan, because, like I said, we were sent all of our scans, and I had to self-refer, write an email to Liverpool requesting a termination of pregnancy, which was the I don't know how I managed to send that email. And then you have to pay about €3,000 beforehand. That's another, there's a financial aspect to that as well, which I, now that I think about it, could be prohibitive for many parents.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck in this limbo. If you can't travel, what if you don't have a visa to go to the UK, all these things. So we were, I guess, fortunate enough that we could just get it done. Then we decided to get the ferry. So some people fly over. I know that brings its own difficulties with it, because they have to, on the way back, or they have to organize to bring back the baby. So we decided to just not say anything, get the ferry in, which was very tough, being quite heavily pregnant. I just thought all eyes are on me, you know, a pregnant woman going to Liverpool. You're at your most vulnerable, and you're on a ferry going to an unknown. I'd never been to Liverpool before, so going into an unknown hospital to give birth, which is scary in itself, my first birth, to be looked after doctors you don't know. That was very tough. Then we got to Liverpool, and I have to say the staff there are absolute angels. I'm sure Alison will say the same, and all the women agree with me on that. They made this unbearable situation somewhat bearable. Then I was there for 3 nights. So they did the procedure. They had to drain fluid from Maeve's head, because her head was, you know, it was all the brain hemispheres were covered up with cerebrospinal fluid. And that's another thing we could see on the ultrasound when they did that her skull just collapsed. So they would have had to do that in Ireland while she was alive. So that would be another cruel thing to do. I would have needed a C-section, and then they would have had to do that procedure just to keep her alive. So that kind of, you always feel guilty about the decision. But when my husband saw that on the ultrasound, he was like, no, we couldn't have done this to her while she was alive. Mm-hmm. So we got a book in Liverpool, and that's where the inspiration for the book came from. And it was a book about baby loss, all different types of baby loss. But it was all from a UK perspective, and there was only one story about a termination.
Okay.
But it was in stark contrast to what we had to go through. You know, the woman in the story went to her doctor told her, listen, it's really bad, you should maybe consider a termination, it's one of the options. And she just came back to her doctor 2 days later. She was surrounded by her family. I remember her husband even brought her duvet from home, and she went home. She didn't have the trauma of traveling and bringing her baby in the boot of the car on a coffin in a coffin in the boot of the car at night. So I was visiting my daughter's Maeve's grave one day, and I thought, listen, we need to have a book like this, because women need to know that they're not alone. They need something to relate to in these times, because I didn't have that. I thought I was the worst person in the world going through all of that. So that's where the idea
came
from,
to
support other women. Yeah.
And I suppose the reality is, Monica, that, you know, there's, your story isn't in isolation. There's many other Irish women that too have, for medical reasons, had to make that trip to Liverpool and across to the UK to other parts to go through the same procedure that you went through as well. And that's why you've decided to kind of, I suppose, collaborate your own story and the stories of others as well in this book. In putting it together, was there, did it help you in sharing your story, Monica?
Oh, it did, yeah. I was in the depths of grief at that time, because it happened last April. And I decided to start doing the book in June. So we have a WhatsApp group for LMC. So with women that went through the same experience. So it was really cathartic, you could say, you know, to just write it all down and then get all the other stories and to see how it helped other women, even just because so many women live in fear. So many women don't even tell their families the full story, don't tell their friends. They just say, oh, we lost a baby, you know. So to be able to actually write down your story and give your child, your lost child, this visibility, it really helps.
Especially when you talk about little baby Maeve, is it?
Yes, yeah.
That's what you called it. Yeah, Maeve, that, you know, you wanted to kind of to document and to share her story as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, yeah. And even listening to you, Monica, talking about, you know, the book in the UK and reading that other woman's experience and her talking about family and friends and the duvet from home and having those kind of comforts and supports. Like, that's obviously very hard, not having that when you've travelled over for such a really life-changing experience.
Oh, definitely. It was a much wanted pregnancy and to have to do that. I mean, it's a trauma on top of trauma, because losing a baby is just unimaginable pain at any stage of pregnancy or even after they're born. And yeah, to have to travel and come back, like I said, nice. So I gave birth on Thursday, and on Friday I was on a ferry at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think any doctor would let a patient in an Irish hospital just leave and go on a ferry 24 hours after giving birth. And then it just messes with your postpartum as well. You don't think you really deserve to, you know, be cared for or to rest, because you don't have a baby to look after. And then and I have to say, I did get good help in the hospital here in Ireland, it's very tough.
It's very difficult. Can I bring Alison in as well, Monica? Alison's with us on the line.
Of course,
and thank you for sharing, you know, your
experience.
I know it's not easy to do, but I do appreciate you sharing some of your story with us today. Alison, can you maybe tell listeners a bit about your own experience?
Sure. Excuse me. Sure, yeah. Again, very similar to Monica's story, that I was very late on in pregnancy. My scans had all been perfect. My 12-week scan was perfect. My 20-week scan was actually perfect. And they just couldn't get a clear visual on his face. And they just said, oh, look, sure, come back and, you know, whenever, when you're with the consultant. And then at 25 weeks, they said, you know, yeah, he does have a little cleft lip there, but it's actually the fluid on the brain that we're concerned about. And I always describe that like a punch to the stomach, that you're going, sorry, what? When did that happen? What's, you know, kind of what happened there? And hundreds of questions come into your mind. And they then sent me for amniocentesis and all of that. And basically, it wasn't just fluid on the brain. He had many, many abnormalities on his brain, and his little long bones were too short. His kidneys were echogenic. He had a list of things wrong with him. And so they were fairly sure that he was going to die, but they didn't know when. And they just said that, like, if he does survive, he will have multiple daily seizures. He will never be able to walk or talk. He'll have no motor skills. He'll have difficulty feeding, all of these things. And you're left there going, my thinking on it was, why would I bring a baby into the world to suffer this much when they're going to pass anyway? Again, like Monica's story, because they weren't sure that he would die within 28 days, I fell outside the legislation. And so they said, you know, my healthcare team here, again, very good. They said, we'll support you whatever you decide to do, whether you decide to continue on with the pregnancy or end it. Mm-hmm. But we won't be able to do a termination for pregnancy here. You will have to travel to the UK to do that. Again, they offered me Liverpool or London. Logistically, Liverpool is a little bit easier, that you're not navigating underground systems and all of that, again, at the worst possible mm-hmm. time. So I chose to go to Liverpool at 30 weeks. I was 30 weeks pregnant at that stage. And again, I was there for about 4 days. They did the procedure on a Monday, and it took about 2 days to induce labour. I always say my body wanted to hold on to him for that little bit longer. I delivered him on the Wednesday, got to spend a little bit of time with him. I had a friend over with me. But then you have to make plans to come home. Now, I actually chose to send, I called my first son Theo. I chose to send him off for post-mortem. So I actually had to leave him at the hospital, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do. Because basically you've given birth to your baby and you have to walk away and leave them in a hospital, get on. And as Monica said, within 24 hours of giving birth, because actually all the flights were booked out in Liverpool because I think there was a match on, I had to travel to Manchester to get a plane. So I had to get a taxi, a train, a plane, and drive 2 hours home when I got to Dublin Airport, all within 24 hours of giving birth without my baby.
The longest journey, Alison, for you.
Oh, yeah, when the flight's delayed and you're sitting there going, I just want to be home. I just want to be home with my own things and, you know, kind of, and you're grieving. You're also physically, you know, have the effects of that. So, yeah, it's you know, really having to travel really just adds unnecessary trauma onto it.
Yeah, look, and I know, obviously, you know, with the referendum, and the book was released to coincide with the 8th year anniversary, wasn't it, of the
European Eighth Amendment? Yeah, that's correct. So, yeah. That's right. So, I mean, this is the thing that, I mean, so I'm the chair of LMC, so I provide the support services a lot of the time for them. And that's what a lot of women say when they contact me first thing. What did we vote for? I thought that people don't realize this was happening. People thought that, well, we voted yes in the 2018 referendum. Therefore, surely this isn't happening anymore. And these are people at their most vulnerable with their most wanted pregnancies going through an incredibly traumatic time. And they're not getting the healthcare that they should be here in Ireland.
Do you feel or hope, and you mentioned the LMC, the Bereavement Support Charity, that's behind the publication of the book, which is called The Impossible Choice for listeners. But do you hope, I suppose, Alison, with publishing this, that it might start the conversation around bringing about further change?
Absolutely, that's a hope. I mean, I think, to be honest, the primary driver of the book was that so other women can get comfort at that time, so they can pick up the book, read stories, and feel that they can identify with something and get comfort going through their own journeys. But absolutely, the more conversations that we can have about this, the better, because it is something that needs to be talked about. It is something, as I say, that people don't even realise is happening. And so that if it does bring about discussion and change, I mean, the ideal would be a legislative change to widen the circumstances that women can access a termination for medical reasons here in Ireland. You know, I also went on to have a subsequent pregnancy that unfortunately had the same abnormalities, but we, with the help of a geneticist, found out the diagnosis during pregnancy. And because of that, they did offer me a termination here in Ireland, but I chose to continue to term. And Jasper was my second son. I delivered him and he lived for about 45 minutes after birth. That was a very different experience for me because my friends and family were there. I got the fantastic cuddle cough from Felacol and I was able to bring my baby home and, you know, the people were able to visit me there. And that was a very different experience than being pregnant, going across to Liverpool, coming back not pregnant without my baby. And it's a very abstract concept for other people to realise you've been through this massive life-changing experience because they have not got to meet Theo. They didn't get to see him. Whereas with Jasper, which is what I called my second son, they did. And it was, I got that ritual of having a funeral and all of that for him over here.
And you, I mean, you can speak to it from, unfortunately, from, you know, from both experiences, Alison, and the difference in those stories for you. It's 15 different women's stories, isn't it, that are included in the book?
Yes, 15 different stories. We support women whether they choose to terminate their pregnancy or continue to term. Everybody's choice is individual and depends on their own personal circumstances. These 15 stories happen to be of women that have chosen to end the pregnancy for medical reasons. 5 of them received care here. 10 of them had to travel to the UK to do so. But it also encompasses their other pregnancy journeys. Beforehand, they might have had miscarriages, fertility struggles, IVF, second trimester losses. So it just, it encompasses everything in the book.
And the reality is, you know, so many more than 15. It's just 15 that are documented in this book called The Impossible Choice. This listener tells me that this very same situation happened to my own sister in 2011. She too had to travel at 24 weeks to the UK. And I'll never forget the devastation. Here we are in 2026. I feel women still being traumatised having to leave their own support network at what must be the most devastating time, says this listener. Look, if you want to share your own stories or experiences with us, drop us an email. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Alison and Monica, listen, thanks a million to you both for sharing that experience with us today on the programme. It's 087 1400 106. That is the WhatsApp number.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.